Well, today we have pianist and composer Rufus Ferguson in the studio. Rufus, great to have you here today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for having me.
Well, I always think it's a great idea to start out with some music. So what do you have today?
I'm going to start with my, not my first composition, although the title is Humble Beginnings. But I think this is one of the first compositions that experimented with non-functional harmony that I wrote. So we're going to start with Humble Beginnings.
Thank you. Humble Beginnings. That's a great tune, Rufus. You said this was your first experience with non-functional harmony in terms of composition. Right. Not everyone knows what non-functional harmony is. Maybe you can explain that.
So in the jazz world, most music that we consider our repertoire, such as jazz standards, are mostly comprised of 2-5-1s. So in the key of C, when we talk about the number system, we're talking about scale degree. So in the key of C, the 2 is D, the 5 is G, and the 1 is obviously C. And in classical harmony, usually the 2 is minor and the 5 is dominant and the 1 is major, which also applies and carries over into jazz. So the 2-5-1 progression is just the minor 2 chord, the dominant 5 chord, and the major 1.
Which is a progression we hear most of the time in jazz standards, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Yeah. And usually that's a good place to start compositionally. And a lot of my tunes that we'll talk about today utilizes a lot of the 2-5-1 progression. But this one was my first attempt at breaking away from traditional or functional harmony into creating chord progressions or harmonic schemes that don't necessarily fit together and kind of put the puzzle together. And so instead of linking tunes or linking the songs with functional harmony, we link them by the melodic structure versus the harmonic structure. And so you'll hear a lot of the notes that goes with one chord will go with the second chord. And that's how we link the non-functional harmony verses through harmonic 2-5-1 progressions.
So does that mean you wrote the melody first?
I'm not really sure how I wrote this. It's been a while.
When did you write it?
I wrote this maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
When I first actually got to Western is when I first wrote this non-functional song, non-functional harmony song. And I think I actually more so wrote it with the harmony and the melody together, which is how I write most of my compositions.
So could you give us an example, maybe play a series of 2-5-1 progressions and then play a section of your song? We could maybe hear how it's different.
Sure. So I think that's a very important part of the song right there. It's kind of feel like that's the climax of the whole piece. And there's no function in those three chords. So the first chord is an A-flat minor 7 to an E7 sus to an F major 7 sharp 11. So those chords have absolutely nothing to do with each other, but they're linked by the melody.
By the melody, yeah. And then, yeah, when you put it all together, it fits. It
right.
makes sense.
It fits all together. Kind of like a nice puzzle.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Humble Beginnings. So how many songs had you written before that?
Not many. When I first came to Western, I was just really getting started in jazz, really getting into jazz. I've loved it, tried to play a little bit of it, knew a few songs, but I didn't really know much about jazz when I first came here. So before this, I may have wrote 4 or 5 songs. And I don't even think they were in the jazz idiom at all.
Yeah. So how did you get started playing the piano then?
I started in the gospel church, which is a really unique place. And you hear a lot of even jazz musicians now talk about their beginnings in gospel music. And so I started as a gospel pianist, eventually switched over to gospel organ. However, unlike most gospel musicians, and especially in Black urban areas or even in Black communities, period, there's not a lot of music education. And there's definitely not a lot of love for classical music or even exposure to the classical music, which I definitely had the pleasure of my parents exposing me to that. So all the while I was playing gospel with a lot of my other friends, that was really all they did. But my parents also took me to classical piano lessons. So I learned to read and I learned to strengthen my ear all at the same time, not knowing that it would eventually lead me to jazz, which both parts are very key to this music.
So how did you end up at Western then?
I was playing with the jazz band at the Hastings Jazz Festival. And I was there with the jazz band, and I happened to watch this group on a lunch break. And as you know, in there they have lunch, you know, entertainment and dinner entertainment. And I happened to see this group. And I actually got to know all of them really well after that. And I saw them walk up, and the drummer, the first thing I said to him, I said, "Can you swing?" And he said, "I don't know, we'll see." And so, man, they started playing, and I was just amazed. And I finally looked at the pianist, and this guy was just doing stuff that was amazing. Two-hand stuff, his harmony was ridiculous, his melodic ideas were amazing. And so I went and stood behind him the rest of that concert. I mean, it's not like a kid. Normally you see kids amazed. I was like 21, 22, and I'm like standing behind the pianist, and come to find out later, the pianist's name was Jeremy Siskin. And at that time, I had just graduated Mott Music College, and I got a call from Jeremy, and he said, "I heard you just graduated, and are you looking to go somewhere else for another degree in music and in jazz?" My first degree was in just general music education. And so I said, "Yeah, sure, I'm interested." And we corresponded from, you know, over the next few months. And I came here and auditioned for him, and the rest is history. And I got at Western, and I can't seem to leave. I love this place.
We're glad you're here. That's for sure. So you did your undergrad here. Now you have your master's degree.
Yep.
And you're still around, thankfully.
Yes.
So that we all get to play with you and experience your music still.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're doing a lot of teaching.
Yeah, doing some teaching at the Suzuki Academy and teaching at Portage Northern, directing the jazz band over there. And I'm also still working in the piano classes at Western, and also getting the chance to work with the lab band at Western. It's been amazing, and thankfully that's been continued. So
yeah,
I'm still around.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some more music.
All right. Speaking of growing up in the gospel black church, there's a tune that I wrote not too long ago called Fear Him. And it's about my faith and my belief in God, and how we're always taught to fear God. And so this is derived from, I guess, a gospel standard, kind of like a jazz standard. And so it infuses that with my love of jazz and my love of gospel music. This is Fear Him.
Yeah. It kind of had a West Indian island feel to it. Yeah. Is that what you were hearing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think all music, especially jazz music and even gospel music, has that African feel, West Indian feel. You hear a lot of the African rhythms and underlining grooves in both music, jazz and gospel.
And in the right hand in the melody, it's like this traditional sounding hymn almost.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the left hand, you've got this groove happening. And
yeah. The right hand is actually is taking pieces from a hymn called Without God, I Can Do Nothing. And it's very popular.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a hymn, actually, more of gospel standard, something that's kind of morphed into a hymn or a hymnal type of song for the church. But it's definitely a traditional song. And so the melody is... So that's the intro, and the melody goes on. And so that melody actually comes from the hymn. It's called Without God. Like I said, Without God, I Can Do Nothing. So you can hear how pretty much is exactly like the song, but I kind of twist it a little bit rhythmically and even at the end, change up the harmonic progression a little bit.
Yeah. How do you feel that the gospel upbringing, how that has influenced your jazz? You know, once you got introduced to jazz, are there specific things that you're drawing from with that gospel upbringing?
I think the biggest thing that comes from being a gospel musician, first and foremost for me, is the soul that's behind the music, which is something that's needed in jazz. And, you know, something is almost, it's almost impossible to teach soul. You know, I heard a lot of people say either you have it or you don't. You can teach harmony, you can teach melody, you can't teach feeling. You know, either you have it or you don't. And I think growing up in a gospel church has instilled in me soul and bringing, you know, spirit to every song. With that said, I think there's also downfalls to starting off in the gospel church and then morphing into jazz. I think because in the gospel church, we build our ears so strong, and most gospel musicians don't read music. It's not necessarily a popular thing in the gospel arena. And so when you try to leave that and go to a genre like jazz or even classical music, where it's you have to be a good reader, you have to learn to read, you have to learn to sight read, you have to learn musical vocabulary. It's kind of hard to allow your ear to stop working and use your brain a little more, use your eyes a little more. And it's always, the ear's always a crutch almost. And so you have to force yourself and train yourself to not use your ear in the way that you traditionally learn to use it and kind of retrain it to use it in a different way.
Did you feel like you had those issues?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think anybody, I don't know too many people who come from the gospel arena and don't have those issues because it's just so strong. You know, even in jazz, I've saw over time that we teach ear, we teach eyes, and we teach them how to work together. But there's no eyes in gospel. It's all ears. And so you go to a place and you almost have to learn to read. And even though I took classical lessons, I learned classical repertoire, but I never learned to read that well when I was taking classical lessons, because my ear was just always dominating it. And so when I came here, it was a struggle to keep up with a lot of the, I mean, they were great players. Then you put some music in front of them and they're great readers too. And it was, for the first few years, it was a struggle to really learn how to effectively read music and decipher it and even learn to sight read.
How long do you think it took you to get to a place where you felt like, okay, things are kind of even now, or I'm feeling much better about my reading?
I think after maybe 2 years, I started feeling comfortable.
Yeah.
But I don't think I actually got to the place where I could really sit down with a band. I mean, a really good group of guys, and they pass out the music. Hey, we're playing this in 30 minutes. You know, maybe for the last year is when I really felt comfortable enough to be like, I could pretty much read anything I need to be able to read. So it definitely takes time, and I'm 25 turning 26. I've been taking lessons since I was 4. So it took all, you know, it took all those years of building it up, and it took years to break it, and intentional practices and discipline to break my ear down to build it back up again.
Yeah, well, it's been fun for me to watch you grow in that way. I mean, now I feel like we're peers. You know, yeah. We work together all the time, and we're friends. And it's really awesome anytime I get to share the stage with you. But I remember when you came in for jazz audition, and I didn't know who you were, and we were listening to rhythm sections, and you got up and played, and it was within the first 4 bars. I was sitting right next to Jeremy. I just like grabbed his arm and I squeezed it and I said, "Who is that?" Yes. Yes. I don't care if he can read or not, you know, because you had that thing.
Yeah.
You had this sound, this feel that, you know, I've spent a fair amount of time in black churches myself. Right. And I listened to that music, and that was something that we were missing here, yeah. You know, and, you know, that's something that you brought here. I think that's affected a lot of people. And it's been a great thing. And then to see you grow in your reading and composition and all those things, and band leading and teaching and all these things, just in a handful of years, yeah. you've really exploded. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
I have an odd love for Broadway. And I heard a song one time on Broadway. I can't remember the name of it. But it was an awesome tune. And so I took different elements of that song, and so this is called Like New York.
Thank you. So how did you come up with that? You said you have this kind of secret love for Broadway.
I've always loved Broadway. I like the theatrics of it. I always loved it. And then when Glee came out, it gave me a chance to get up close and personal with Broadway every week. And so I watch Glee. I mean, I hope my friends don't hear this interview. I watched Glee like crazy. I love the musical part of it. I mean, yeah, not necessarily the acting, but I like the musical part of Glee and the arrangements and everything. And I heard this song on Glee. And I took those first three notes and kind of crafted this Broadway waltz, you know? And that's how this tune came about.
So you've got all these different influences. You studied classical piano, grew up in a black church. Yeah, you love Broadway, I'm just finding out now.
Yeah.
And of course, jazz. Besides the gospel thing, I mean, you've also done a lot of R&B, soul music, which obviously is connected to that. But you've had a chance to play with some pretty big names in R&B and gospel. Tell us about that.
I've had the extreme blessing of playing with some, and side by side with some awesome people. Playing side by side with Temptations and Jill Scott. And
well, there was that gospel tour you did last year, I think you told me about.
Yeah, and I got a chance to be with Ernest Pugh, man. It was just amazing. And oddly enough, I actually played guitar in that band. I did a few things on keys, but I was actually hired in on guitar for Ernest Pugh, and I did those shows on guitar.
Wait a second. You play guitar?
I play guitar. I actually played jazz guitar before I played jazz piano, and then I switched over to playing gospel guitar, which was against my will. But where I came from, they were stacked with keyboard players. I mean, stacked with pianists and organists. There was no way I was breaking into that scene on piano. So I got a Strat and all these different pedals, distortion pedals. I started learning to play gospel and R&B and rock guitar. And I played with Ernest Pugh with a band called High Definition for a bit. This one, I was still a student in Flint. And we were all students at the music school there in Flint.
Wow. So you played organ, piano, and guitar. I did not know that about you at all. I've never heard you play guitar.
Not too many people have. Only the guitar players at Western have heard me play guitar. Oddly enough, nobody else has ever heard me play guitar.
The secret's out.
Yeah. I don't play much anymore.
You've been getting all these calls for guitar now.
Yeah, I've turned the majority of them down.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about playing with Jill Scott, because I love Jill Scott. And what was that like, and how did that come about?
It was in Atlanta, and it was by a connection I had down there, a guy named Terry Dukes, who actually was the backup singer for an R&B vocalist named Peebo Bryson in the 80s. And yeah, I mean, Terry was amazing. And he gave me like a chance to get out, and he took me to different places and learn to play and really get my feet wet in music. And it was a club in Atlanta, and Jill came in, and she sang, and I was on the keys, and we hit it off, man. You know, like, she liked my playing, I liked her singing. She was amazing. I learned so much from the musicians in that band. I mean, they taught me professionalism. They taught me how to play. They taught me to hang on tight, you know. And that band was tough, man. They had some good players.
Who was playing drums with her?
I want to say Little John Roberts was at that time.
Whoa, yeah.
I'm not sure if he's still with her or not, but I think he was playing at that time.
Wow.
And I can't think of the bass player's name. Who was the MD of the band? Adam Blackstone. Adam Blackstone, who's also the bass player for Maroon 5 and that band, their MD. And he was very understanding of me being a young musician. Very understanding.
Now, you were playing keys in this band, though.
Keys, yeah.
Okay, all right. And how much did you work with her?
A little bit, not much. For, you know, maybe a year or so, I got a chance to play some of her music. And my parents sent me down there to go to school. So it was like, yeah, you're not in school, so either you're on your own or you're coming back. I was like, all right, I'll stay on my own. And then I realized, man, I really want to do music. And I can't be a performer all my life. I got to get a degree. So I went back to school and got my degree and now master's, and yeah.
Well, it's pretty great. You're going to be 26 and you already have a master's degree and all this experience.
Yeah. It's a blessing, man. It's definitely been hard. It's definitely been hard, but it's worth it.
Well, what else would you like to play today?
Recently, actually just did a video with, actually, you were on that with the KBR sessions at Overneath.
Overneath the Creative Collective.
Yes. Yeah. The awesome studio. God, the studio's amazing.
Yep.
And my group, the Rufus Ferguson Music Group, which is my new group that I've put together, played on that show. And I wrote a tune for that called Celestial. Well, I actually wrote Celestial a while back, about a year ago, for a quartet that I had, traditional piano quartet with a trumpet player. Didn't get the right vibe. And I put a new band together with guitar and seaboard, and it, man, that song finally came to life. So this is called Celestial. And it's kind of hard to play because it's so intricate in parts, but I'll try to get through it piano solo style. Thank you.
Celestial.
Yeah.
How did that tune come about?
So I was kind of forced to write this tune. I was in a band called the Elliott Build Quartet. And he said, Rufus, write a tune, write a tune. I was like, all right, I'll write something. Write something different. I was like, all right, I'll write something different. So it originally started off, like I said, with trumpet, piano, drums, and bass. And it sounded great. Don't get me wrong, it was amazing when the band played it. But I felt like I had more of a spacey, you know, celestial vibe. And I actually eventually renamed this tune called Time and Space because of the piano solo section is kind of in time and it's driving, where the rest of the tune is kind of spacey. And you can actually hear the full version of this on YouTube under the Overneath KBR page. You'll see the Rufus Ferguson Music Group playing Celestial, the live recorded video and audio of this. And it's amazing. They did an awesome job. But once you hear that, you'll understand kind of where the space part of this tune comes from. There's space, you know, you can hear the space in the head and in the guitar solo of that take. Time is kind of just free. It's spacey. It's kind of like if you're in gravity, which I've never been in space. But from what I hear, there's no gravity. So, you know, things are kind of floating, and that's kind of how the vibe is. Until the piano solo hits, and then it's time. And you feel the groove, you feel the time. And so I actually renamed this called Time and Space, but because it was Celestial on the recording, I continued to call it Celestial, but I renamed it Time and Space.
It's interesting when I hear you play, especially your original compositions, a lot of them have a bass line or a lot of left-hand activity. Does that come from playing organ in the church?
I think the idea of needing some, as we call it, some bottom, comes from being an organ player in the church, where I actually would normally use my feet to run bass. But when I started playing jazz organ, I had to learn quickly to learn to walk bass with my hand, because there's no way you can play Cherokee at 300 BPM with your feet. Just not going to happen. So you learn to walk bass with your hand. And so I think now it's kind of carried over into my piano pieces, where there's always some type of bass line, you know, there's always some type of, you know, low groove happening under everything.
Yeah, it really reminds me of a few piano players that I really love, like James Williams or Donald Brown or Mulgrew Miller. These guys that came out of the church that play jazz music, a lot of their original tunes have some sort of a bass line written in it. And Matthew Freese studied with those guys.
Yeah.
And so he's embodied that as well. And
yeah.
So it kind of resonates with me when I hear you play that.
Yeah, I mean, Mulgrew's probably my biggest influence. I mean, as a pianist, one of my best friends and family member as well was the last bass player for Mulgrew, who lives in Chicago now, named Ivan Taylor, phenomenal bass player. And he was Mulgrew's last working bass player. And so I think I fell in love with Mulgrew through Ivan. And, I mean, he's still working and playing with amazing cats now. But that's where my love for Mulgrew came. And I think it's more than just the church. I think also, you know, Mulgrew, especially Donald Brown, too, they come from that New Orleans, that Louisiana type of music. And so I think that's kind of in that you hear the guys play stride and, you know, it's amazing. Like they got so much feel behind it. So I think it's part church, part New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. The first time I heard you, I thought Mulgrew.
Yeah.
And even just the way you sat at the piano, I was like, oh my gosh, he reminds me of Mulgrew. And maybe that's, you know, just my frame of reference.
Yeah.
But that's what I associated you with right off the bat.
Yeah. I'm a Mulgrew fan until I die.
Yeah, man.
He's probably my biggest influence.
Well, we're talking about all of your original compositions and your introduction to jazz. Could you play a jazz standard for us?
Yeah.
Maybe do an impromptu arrangement?
Yeah. Let's do a little bit of Autumn Leaves. Thank you.
That was Autumn Leaves, like I've never heard it before.
Thanks, Keith.
Managed to fit all of your influences and everything we've talked about in this last hour into that arrangement.
Yeah. That's something I learned from Ogru. I mean, the one thing I did learn from Ogru before he passed, I actually did a master class, and one thing he said to me was, don't be afraid to be dirty, man. Like, it doesn't have to be clean, you know? So a lot of times I try to make my playing clean, you know, especially for the academic setting, but it's something I always carry around. He says, man, you got a lot of stuff going, your gospel, your R&B, your funk, your blues, your jazz, your soul, you know, make it dirty, you know, just get it greasy. And so that's something I definitely carry around.
You're taking a lot of chances there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Mulgrew always just said, you know, you listen to anything Mulgrew does and it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's just like gumbo. It's New Orleans, man.
Yeah.
It's back to that.
Yeah. So what's next for Rufus Ferguson?
I think I actually would like to, oddly enough, maybe step away from jazz for a second and go back to, you know, well, maybe not step away from jazz. Maybe I'll just say just morph into just being a pianist and an organist. You know, if it happens to be a jazz sometimes, that's great. But I definitely want to just be more musical, you know, and less of a gospel artist or less of a jazz artist, you know. I think that's my next goal, to kind of even out all my playing fields. And, you know, because you're playing church all the time, it's kind of hard. You lose a little bit of the jazz. And when you're playing jazz all the time, you go back to church and you're throwing a few too many, you know, diminished dominance and everything, you know. So I want to round myself out a little bit more and just, you know, love music, not just jazz, not just gospel, just be a musician, you know.
Yeah. And how can folks find out more about you?
You can go to my webpage, rufusfergusonmusic.com. You'll see videos of me playing with different people. You'll be able to read my bio and learn a little bit more about me. I'm based in Kalamazoo, so, you know, if you're in Kalamazoo, I'd love to play with any and everybody, you know. I'm not closed off to anything. I just love to play music. As long as you got a good heart and good spirit, you know, let's play, let's hang, let's talk.
And when can we expect a Rufus Ferguson album to be released?
oddly enough, my professor and friend Andrew Rathman asks me that all the time. Let me hear more of your music, more of your music. And I've had to tell him and others, you know, I'm not honestly interested in having an album. I'm not interested in being a jazz artist or any artist for that matter. I like playing for people. I like being, they had a nickname for me at Western at one time called Sideman Ferguson, because I would play with any and everybody, and that's what I love to do. Like, I love I love community. I love music, and I don't mind playing my music with other people, but I'm not interested in promoting myself as a solo artist or, you know, as a leader of a group. I just want to play with everybody. That's my MO.
Well, you are really good at making other people sound good.
I've been told, and to me, that's a bigger compliment than you sound great by yourself. You know, I love making other people's music come to life, and you see their face when it happens. It's like, it's priceless, you know?
Yeah. But we would like to hear more of your music, however that is. You know, maybe it's not promoting yourself so much, but it would be great to hear more of your compositions.
There's more coming. There's more coming. You know, I have awesome musicians around me all the time, like yourself, so I have awesome bands playing them, I'm sure. So when they come, you'll hear them. You'll know. Right. You'll know they're mine. You can tell by the grease and the gospel and everything.
All right. Well, once again, Rufus, thanks so much for taking the time to be here with me today and
it's my pleasure.
To share your music and just to share your heart. And it's been great. I've learned a lot about you in this hour.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you. It's great to be here. I love this radio station. I love everything about, you know, this show that happens. So I'm glad to be a part of it.